Welcome to The Edges of Lean. I'm Bella Engelbach, and in this podcast, we explore the human and creative side of lean thinking, unusual places where lean thinking is practiced. We meet people who are practicing continuous improvement in many different flavors and styles. So come along with me on a journey to the edges of lean. According to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, in 2009, the U.S. generated about 2.4 million tons of e-waste. That is, waste consisting of used electronic equipment like televisions, computers, computer components, and mobile phones. And that was 11 years ago. Much of that waste is not recycled to reclaim its precious metal components, and it ends up in landfills in the U.S. Some of it is even shipped to other countries to be placed in their landfills. From a lean perspective, there's a lot of waste in the e-waste problem. That's where organizations like Free Geek come into play. My guests today are John Ashcraft of Free Geek in Portland, Oregon, and Maria Grzanka and Brian Hurley, who volunteer with Lean Portland. They're going to share how lean thinking helps to reduce waste with the folks who are working hard to address the e-waste problem.
And 3 years is a long time for a computer that you're trying to reuse. So we're able to, you know, make wiser decisions with better data.
John Ashcraft, welcome to the Edges of Lean.
John Ashcraft is the manager of receiving and recycling and chief EH&S compliance officer at Free Geek, the Portland-based nonprofit with a mission to sustainably reuse technology, enable digital access, and provide education to create a community that empowers people to realize their potential. John has 10 years' experience with electronics recycling and is responsible for ensuring compliance and has been supported by Lean Portland in his efforts to get organized, reduce waste, and build a culture of continual improvement.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
It's great to have you, and you've got some companions here today, and we'll introduce them shortly. John, can you tell us about Free Geek? What is it, and what do you do?
Yeah, we're a nonprofit in Portland, Oregon, and we were founded 20 years ago to solve two problems. One is, of course, e-waste. There's a lot of computers out there that are destined to the landfill if we don't do something better with them. And the other is what we now call the digital divide. There's a lot of people out there who don't have access to computers and the internet. And without that access, it's hard to fully engage in society. And everyone knows that now more than ever with the pandemic. So we take used computers, we refurbish them, we give them out to people who need them. And that's the base of what we do. We've been doing it for 20 years. A lot of different ways the community engages with those programs. But one of my roles there is to manage the receiving and recycling. So there's a lot of logistics involved. There's a lot of material to move. And like I said, we've been doing it for 20 years. So we've had dozens of people, you know, with their hand in, like making improvements here or there. And I think about 4 or 5 years ago, Lean Portland, an organization, reached out to us for ways that they might be able to offer their professional services pro bono to our nonprofit to help improve our systems. I was excited to jump on that, and we've had a lot of interactions over the years that have really helped us go from people who had good insights making changes to a more thoughtful approach to how we do things. And one of the really cool things, like I won't call myself a lean expert at this point, but having some of the vocabulary, having some of the ways of thinking about reducing waste, doing the 5S, doing the value stream mapping was super helpful for us. That's something that'll always stick in my mind. We knew we had like a closet full of computers, waiting to be refurbished. But when Maria, who you'll meet in a minute, helped us do a value stream mapping, we're able to say, because of the way our system was set up, some of those computers sit in the back of that closet for 3 years. And 3 years is a long time for a computer that you're trying to reuse. So we're able to, you know, make wiser decisions with better data.
Well, thanks, John.
Maria Grzanka is a continuous improvement facilitator, instructor, and coach in Portland, Oregon. She teaches process improvement at Portland State University's Center for Executive and Professional Education and volunteers as a co-organizer and open space facilitator with Lean Portland and The Future of Work Portland. Prior to working independently, Maria led continuous improvement efforts in manufacturing, energy, and logistics.
Tell us about going into FreeGeek and doing value stream mapping, and how did that get started from the Lean Portland end?
Hi, Bella. I'm trying to actually recall it. I think there was originally, so Lean Portland does some free workshops. And so we had some introductory workshops where we probably covered concepts about the 7 or 8 types of waste, along with 5S. And as we started talking and working more closely with FreeGeek, it seemed like value stream mapping would be a valuable tool to understand how the items that are donated to FreeGeek for recycling travel all the way through their value stream. So, you know, we did the usual sticky note thing. And like John was saying, there's some vocabulary that's helpful to be able to put a name to the thing that you're seeing happen in your workplace.
That, you know, it's really interesting to me to think about doing that in a nonprofit organization and to reach out. And we also have with us Brian Hurley, also from Lean Portland. And Brian, could you tell us a little bit about Lean Portland and how does it happen that you reach out to an organization like FreeGeek?
Brian Hurley was the one who just made the connection between Lean Portland and FreeGeek. He's a Lean Six Sigma Master Black Belt at Business Performance Improvement in Portland. He teaches Lean and Six Sigma classes, facilitates workshops and events, performs statistical analysis, and mentors employees through improvement efforts. He volunteers his time with Lean Portland as the community consultant lead, managing and leading multiple nonprofit improvement projects. He's the author of the Lean Six Sigma for Good book series.
Yeah, I just had to come up through my notes here and try to figure out when we started. It looks like 2017.
So it's been a while.
Yeah, and I remember the first time I visited FreeGeek, I think I was looking for some computer parts and stumbled onto this cool little store. But I had no idea what was going on in the back of the whole operations. And then I was part of a training called the Master Recycler Program here in Oregon. And what you do is you learn about how our system works in Portland on the trash and composting and how the whole system works. And one of the tours they set up was at FreeGeek. And so they got to take us in the back. And I think John was the host of that tour. And of course I was, you know, my brain was going crazy with they actually had a really a lot of cool stuff already in place. They had some good visuals for their gloves. They had good visuals on their bins and stuff. So there is already some good practices there. And I said, this is really cool. And I like what they're doing. And I wonder if they would like some help. And so I think we ended up having some further discussions from there. But the group itself, Lean Portland, was actually founded by Matt Horvat. He was looking to set up a networking group when he moved to Portland. And so he set it up that way. And then he and a couple others had done a pro bono consulting work for Friends of the Children. I think that was like 2011 or 12, if we get the dates right there. And they worked with, you know, a volunteer group to try and reduce the time that it took for the volunteers to record their time that they're spending with the kids that they're mentoring. And they were driving back and forth to the office, and they figured out a way to, like, they could record their time the next day and not have to drive back to the office and waste time. And so, along with other improvement efforts there, but that kind of got I think his the idea in his head going that we could continue this work. And I think when Maria and I got more involved around that 2015, 2016 timeframe, then we had enough people that we said, let's go try to reach out to a couple other organizations. So we had one other group we worked with in 2016. And then we ran into John and started working with FreeGeek.
So John, Brian says that you already had some, it sounds like visual management going on. Was that just people executing their good ideas? How did that come about?
Yeah, I think with so many people having an influence, I'm sure there are some people who had had a more academic approach. But yeah, I think it's a lot of things that you pick up here or there. One thing I was really proud of was we had a workstation that we call advanced recycling. You could basically stand in one spot and access little bins, like 30 little bins for where things go. And those all corresponded to like a barrel or a big box on a pallet somewhere else in the warehouse. But from this location, you could sort a bunch of things. You didn't have to walk. So we were kind of aware, like common sense aware of wasted movement, wasted space. But I think another cool thing we had was lines on the floor, like inspired by a hospital. So we have a big maze-like building and a lot of volunteers. So in a non-pandemic time, we would have 30 volunteers coming through during a day, wow. Some of them for the first time. So we want to say like blue line is bathroom, green line is recycling, black line is the meeting room. So a lot of those
very cool helpful, things, very yeah. helpful.
Yeah. Wow. So, but you already had that improvement mindset then, and you were, and that's why one of the things that I think is interesting about the nonprofit world is in a way you're forced to be lean in the way that people normally think of lean as being needing to really make the most of the resources that you have. John, what's your background in nonprofit? I know you have a background that with computers. What's your background as a nonprofit leader?
Pretty much all at FreeGeek over the last 10 years. I was kind of an entrepreneur, basically dumpster diving books and selling them on Amazon for 10 years. College textbooks sell for a lot of money sometimes. But then I kind of retired from the internet. I volunteered at FreeGeek because it had such a great mission. Eventually I became an intern. Eventually they hired me into an entry-level position. And then I've kind of moved up through some management levels over the last 10 years. Always been informally recycling cans and copper wire since I was a kid. But in the nonprofit world, it's basically been the last 10 years at FreeGeek. I've really had a lot of opportunity to kind of see how the budgeting process works. We've pursued R2 certification. We get audited towards the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality's eCycles program. So that requires a certain level of like management system quality and consistency. Part of that is a continual improvement. So I was not unfamiliar with the idea of kind of having a thoughtful approach to this. And when Brian approached me after the tour, it just seemed like a really great fit to help me get the skills I needed, and particularly to help me share those with my team, because it's easy for me to say like, hey, let's improve something, but without the shared language, without the overview that Maria mentioned about like, here's why a lean process is more helpful than scary, how problems are opportunities, and not that we're going to find problems and everyone's going to have a bad day because of it. Another thing that really kind of floats to the top of my head about those early days of conversation, we've been around for a long time. We get random stuff from the public. So my department's job was like to take that stuff and push it out to other people in the buildings. And from my perspective, their job was like to accept whatever I gave them and to do good reuse with it. And talking through Lean, we've talked about more of a pull-based system, like let's not put effort into something unless it's got an end destination. So let's let our free computer programs and our sales channels drive what we put that effort into. And being able to, you know, have that shared language with my coworkers and management and my team makes a lot of difference. It's hard to, like, you know, I've been disappointed in myself with my engagement with Lean because I'm always looking for, like, what's the big success? What's the thing that we did that says we won the Lean game? Obviously that's not how it works. But so when I look more critically, I'm like, here is the cultural shift that working with Lean Portland has made. And we're now producing 3 or 4 times as many laptops per month as we did when we started talking to Lean.
That sounds like a pretty big win to me.
A lot of great people on my team doing a lot of stuff. But I think when we first started talking to Lean, we're like, we can't do more than we're currently doing with what we have. And we have changed that mindset to, like, how do we do more with what we have?
You know, what's funny to me about that, John, is you know, when you work with a for-profit company, that's often what you hear. You know, we can't possibly do more with what we have. You know, so this is, I think, you know, exactly what it's like going into a for-profit company. But Brian and Maria, what did you see that was different about working with a nonprofit? I guess with working perhaps sometimes with volunteers. And you're volunteers to do this.
Yeah. Well, there was definitely like, and I think Bella, you're right that we often hear that same sentiment in for-profit businesses. I think that sometimes nonprofits are operating from the sense of like scarcity. John mentioned early on, there was a kind of the feeling that we needed to do something productive with every item that we received. But if you take that back to their purpose, as he mentioned in the beginning about bridging that digital divide, then the real goal is to be able to output as many refurbished items that can help fill that divide as effectively as possible. John also mentioned the, you know, laptops that would sit in a closet for 3 years. Well, of course, you know, they're taking up space. The inventory is taking up space. And by the time we get to refurbishing a particular item, it might not even be up to current standards for whatever operating systems are available. So there's kind of a time frame on how long that inventory is actually useful.
It has an expiration date, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. And we didn't start out with the value stream mapping. I think, like John and Brian both mentioned, there was there were already some spot improvements in different areas. The value stream map kind of pulled that all together into one continuous flow through the operation. But we actually started with a 5S project in the mobile phones area. And we had some really good before and after pictures of that area. So there was a lot of mobile phones that come in, and also that experience of obsolescence was really present there because mobile phones go through new cycles so quickly.
Brian, I see you nodding your head.
Yeah, the mobile device 5S effort that we did, it was really interesting. You know, we had some expert volunteers that were running that area. I think you might have had some staff there too, John. But the main kind of the area was set up for, you know, they were comfortable with the situation and the organization of the space, but from an outsider perspective, it was a little confusing as far as where everything went and where everything was located. But, you know, for people, when you're in the middle of it, it's like, I know where all these cords are at. This one's behind this over here, and this one's underneath this book, and they can find everything. And so, you know, trying to bring in that forward that says, you know, how do we make it simple and declutter. And there's actually some really good benefits of not having the stress of all the stuff laying around. You know, it's not just to look nice, but it actually makes you feel a little more like comfortable. There is a stress level of the clutter that it takes up.
It's definitely a theme we've felt on our side, you know, as our culture has kind of shifted over the years, kind of getting out of that a little bit of a hoarding mentality, but more the good feeling of like, we need to do the best we can with everything while also knowing like we can't get our hands on every one of these, you know, almost obsolete peripherals that, you know, we have 500 of them in a pile and we only actually give out 10 a year. So the five S's is another example of like, I don't know that we've ever got to all five of the S's, but getting the intention behind like, let's reevaluate what we're doing. Like there's a pile over there nobody wants to look at. No one has touched the bottom of that pile in months or years. Let's ask ourselves the question, do we need that pile? And as we kind of go through the process and we get rid of a third of the stuff in our space, if nothing else, it's a big relief to the people working there that like, I don't have to worry about that monster pile anymore. I'm going to focus on this thing that we have prioritized. And one of the great things is we started with Lean Charter, with Lean Portland, we did a charter. And, you know, there's like, we brainstormed 50 things we could focus our improvement on. And as Maria hinted, like we said, the real pipeline, the one that matters most, is getting laptops in the door, refurbished into people who need a laptop today. And that's the first time I remember organizationally really like laser focusing on that. And that's what's really helped us grow, that continues to guide our decisions. I've got a lot of things coming in my department. When the pandemic hit, it's like all of my staff went on voluntary furlough. So it was just me doing the receiving and the resorting for a while. And I was confident in doing that. It's like the thing that matters most is laptops and their power adapters. And if a couple of dirty mice don't get cleaned and tested, that's fine.
So it's really, it's about the purpose then, John, isn't it? The 5S and the value stream mapping are great. But what sounds like what you've really discovered is a way to have a purpose and a true north for the organization.
Yeah, it's been a big piece of it. And as I keep saying, like the language around that has really helped. So our lean journey is one of continual improvement, and we're not finished, and we don't expect to finish. We expect to keep plugging away and getting better every year.
Well, if you finish, you'd be the first people ever to do that. So.
Yeah. I was telling someone earlier today that the journey is the work. It's always about continuous, I'll stress, emphasize continuous improvement. And that is the work that we strive to do. So something, you know, like value stream mapping is a cool looking activity, but it is really to align you to a purpose and be able to see the systems that work to create that purpose, make that purpose a reality.
It's a means to an end, right? I mean, not we just said there is no end, but it's a means to an end of knowing the direction and what you're going to do.
I was going to add something to what John said about the nonprofit world. Some of our work has been with donation organizations, and I was really attracted to that also because I like to keep things out of the landfill and reuse. And that was a real challenging too, to you know, figure out that, you know, some of the stuff needs to move on. It's, you want to salvage every little bit of material you can, because I don't want to throw that away. And to know that how expensive that can be to hold on to it. And another organization we've worked with, you know, things would sit on their sales floor for months, if not years, and to try to say, this is costing you money, even though you got this for free and you're keeping it out of the landfill, you know, if it sits here for more than a year, it's, you're essentially, you're paying it. You have your own little landfill in this facility. And so, you know, yes, it's really painful to let go of those items, but this is holding up and it's taking up another, someone else from buying something more valuable that's sitting behind the scenes somewhere that people can't see it because it's cluttered behind this thing that nobody wants. And so that was really hard for me as someone who doesn't want to see this stuff thrown away. And I've talked to the people at Free Geek and these other organizations, and it's really difficult for them to try to let go of some of those items when that's not, that's why they got involved, is they're trying to keep things out of landfill and to say this needs to go. At least we can recycle. Like John's got a really good recycling program where they can salvage as much of the metals and get some of that back into the system. So it's not completely going to landfill, but some things do get thrown away.
Yeah, and thanks for mentioning that. So it's not just about the pieces, it's the components of the pieces, right? That John, you can do something with.
Yeah, for sure. I can recycle most everything that comes in the door, and some of it deserves to be recycled just because it's that old and obsolete. Mm-hmm. Some of it, recycling is better than sitting in a closet for 3 years and then eventually recycling it. So the earlier we can make that decision, the better for sure. And there's some borderline stuff, of course. And so we put a little effort into it. We try to find maybe a local small business who can kind of take it that last step. But the old heartache that we've pretty much gotten rid of now is that we would like set something aside. Our refurbishment team would fix it up and test it. Sales team would put it out on the floor. And a couple years later, it's been picked through and like the best one sold. But so all the worst stuff was still in the store 3-4 years ago. And then we had a store full of stuff that hasn't sold in 5 years. We've totally turned that around. Our current sales team has made pre-pandemic had made a really beautiful like display place that really put the monitors, the computers, the laptops out front. And then you could still get the weird old part if you needed it. But we weren't focused on the weird old parts. We were focused on the laptops.
Well, and there's probably occasionally somebody who really needs that weird old part for something, right?
Yeah. And we try to make those available. But another kind of insight that I've had is like, if that weird old part is available for $5 on eBay, then our moral responsibility to like reuse that weird old part is kind of diminished, right? If we can instead focus on getting another computer to a family, and that's really the focus.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, if we had something like so unique and cool that it's the only one in the world, that would like change the math. But we get things that were sold by the tens of millions. So
yeah. If it was that unique, you could get donated to the Smithsonian. But, yeah. So, you know, one of the things that this really makes me think about is the whole economy that I think we think of when we think about lean and continuous improvement. So when I, started to learn about lean, and even before that, learning about Six Sigma, it was really about this idea of making things in a plant and getting them out to a customer. And of course, you don't want to make more than the customers are actually going to buy. That's wasteful. But, that's why you have a sales and marketing team. So the sales and marketing team can create demand for these things. But at the same time, what we are facilitating as continuous improvement support for those kind of activities, what we're facilitating is getting more consumer goods out there, right? Most of which end up in landfills, and they may make a stop, at a recycling place, or they may make a stop at a thrift shop or a reseller. But the pathway seems to be from the mine where the material, raw materials are generated to back to the earth in the landfill. And that's ultimately waste. Now people get value out of the object that, during its useful life cycle. And so I'm just wondering, Maria and Brian, in thinking about your own practice, has this kind of work changed how you think?
Yeah, for me, for sure. I mean, I think more in terms of, rather than getting a product to a customer, is what kind of impact are we creating in the world? So it's really important for me to connect with the purpose of the organization. I mean, even if I was working with somebody that made shampoo, it's like, well, what is the purpose of this shampoo? So that I, you know, my hair is looking great today. But that's the impact that I want to create. It's not about more shampoo. It's about more people having feeling good about their hair. So when I look at my time and how I'm spending my time, you know, the way that Lean Portland works with the different volunteer consulting projects, it usually starts with someone from Lean Portland that is passionate about some kind of nonprofit's cause. So, you know, Brian was interested in recycling, so he was naturally there on a tour at Free Geek and thought, here's an opportunity. And I think within the Lean Portland community, we have a lot of like-minded people that are thinking, you know, I'm using these skills at work and my job. I'm also spending time volunteering just as a way to give back to the community. How do I marry up those two things so that rather than just putting in hours at a nonprofit as a volunteer, I can amp that up by bringing skills of continuous improvement to a nonprofit.
Brian, what are your reflections on this?
Yeah, I think what attracted me to, you know, Free Geek and the other not donation organizations was that I was realizing that, you know, that there's a lot we can do on the back end of a lot of the production and consumer activity that we have that isn't really being accounted for. And so, and these methods of Lean and Six Sigma work on anything, including reducing our energy usage and the material loss and keeping, you know, scrap down and reducing our water. What do we actually need to do the job? And that's wasteful when we consume more water than is necessary or consume more energy than is needed for that particular activity. So that really, I ran across some stuff from the EPA back in early to mid 2000s that they put out, and they were promoting Lean as a way to work with organizations to get their foot in the door. Say, we want you to think about these Lean methods because we know if you do Lean, you're going to reduce your chemical use. You're going to reduce your water. You're going to reduce your material usage. And that's going to be good for the mission that they were trying to drive. So that really, I was so like excited when I kind of made that connection. And so I kind of been trying to work towards that for a long time and figuring out how do we design products from the very beginning that can be reused, that we can have a second life. And I'm sure John sees examples where, boy, if they just designed this differently, I could take this whole chunk of metal out and get full value out of it. But now, because of the way it's designed, I can't even get to it without breaking other things. Or, you know, it's the idea of you make it and then it get thrown away when you're done. We're going to run out of materials and metals and supplies at some point. So we have to be able to think about the circular economy to figure out how do we, everything goes into the process and then it gets recycled through that process over and over and over again. And very little will end up as waste at the end. So I think that's kind of the ultimate in my mind is this economy that we don't have a landfill. We don't have things that it goes to. It gets reconsumed into other processes or other materials or other items.
So that's in the design process then. Yeah, John, go ahead.
I was just going to say that that's why, you know, at Free Geek, we know reuse is so much more important than recycling. You can recycle a laptop and you'll get a pound of steel and copper and aluminum and trace amounts of gold, and you'll keep the battery from going into a river. And so recycling is critical. But almost all of the energy put into a laptop is the manufacturing and processing. Like gold mining, super toxic, recycle the gold, sure. But think of all the like dozens of parts built all around the world, shipped together, warehoused, moved back and forth. There's a lot of like rare earth metals that just aren't recovered in the recycling process. So if we can get a used laptop from a business that's been maybe used for 3 or 4 years, get that back to a family who's going to use it for 6 or 7 more years, then we basically tripled the life with the extra energy was what it took for us. And, you know, that's some good staff time, that's lights in the building, but it's nothing compared to manufacturing. So you brought up the subject. I just wanted to gush a little bit about like reuse things as much as you can, because recycling, while important, once you can like follow the math, it is a fraction of the impact of actual reuse and reducing consumption.
Well, I hate to tell you, in my neighborhood, we diligently put out our recycling every week. It's Wednesday. We're recording this on a Wednesday. We put it out this morning, and I believe most of it's actually going to an incinerator, because there's nobody that will buy it right now at a price that we want it, our township wants to sell it for. So that's not, you know, it's not particularly satisfying to do, or actually even to do all that work of separation, which we're required to do. And know that it's going, well, I'll go to an incinerator instead of going to a landfill, you know.
The markets are drying up on all the recycling. I mean, we can't send things to China anymore. They don't want it.
Yeah, yeah. So we really do have to think about, in creating products, is that full life cycle, right, Brian? And what you were talking about is the circular economy. And building that into design processes. It's challenging, I think, for somebody who's designing a product to think about designing it to be easy to build in the plant. And John, you were talking about, well, you know, these parts and pieces and metals and rare earths are coming from all over the world, and things are being transported all over the world, which takes a lot of energy. So, you know, you were sort of asking people, you know, design to reduce that while you're also designing to make it easy to build, while you're also designing to make it something that the customer likes. So it sounds like it requires, you know, quite a bit more thinking about the design process than perhaps people are always doing right now.
More stakeholders, you know, on in that design cycle. It's always trying to get as many voices into that early discussion about, I'm going to design this new product. It's like, you're everywhere along that entire life cycle. And it's not just from the manufacturing process, like we talk about in Lean often, it's coming in the door and leaving out the door. It's actually the entire life cycle of the product, from the design all the way through till, you know, its end of life. And how is that how are we incorporating the needs and the impact, and accounting for the impact to the community, to the environment, throughout that whole life cycle? It's not just the assembly or the manufacturing. How do we incorporate transportation and local suppliers and develop the supply chain? All those things it's challenging. But to do it right, you have to involve all those voices really early in that process.
So I'm thinking back to our conversation around value stream mapping, and I'm wondering, what would it look like if we extended that value stream map into a more circle picture that went all the way from the raw materials to where the product is actually, like, beyond the customer, how the product is disposed of or reused, just as a way of stepping back to see that whole circular picture. That might be an interesting exercise, John. We should figure out how to do that.
I like the way you think. One way we kind of started touching on that is by doing the value stream mapping. It helped bring into focus, like, we've got a couple of incoming streams. So it's not just like, oh, we get 1,000 computers a month. In normal times, maybe it was 600 computers from business and government, 300 computers from individuals. And if we break those down, we know that if the city of Portland or Multnomah County gives us their refresh laptops after 3 or 4 years, then we can reuse 80, 90% of those, because they were taken off a desk. They're still modern. If one of them's broken, we've got another one of identical model we can switch parts with. But if we're getting someone cleaning out their grandpa's basement, and it's just, here's all the laptops from there that were used until they died, like, great, I'm glad they had a full life, but those don't have the same reusability. So looking at our upstream for, like, what's the source and where's the biggest impact. And that's on the computers that have are coming in as a group that have maybe been used less of their potential lifestyle, their life cycle. And that also helps us focus where we need to. I did want to just mention how great it was. One of the few like silver linings, like when the pandemic hit and we had to like send all our volunteers home, let most of our staff work from home or just like kind of stay home while we figured things out. Having had this kind of lean mindset, my team had kind of their own accord, taken a bunch of the standard things we do, measured like how long does it take to do this? How much do we, you know, what's the output of you've taken this computer apart, you've got so many pounds of gold bearing material, so many pounds of power supplies or steel, apply the average price to that. And so I had really good numbers for saying, this is a thing that we were doing that isn't worth doing financially. And in also isn't worth doing environmentally. And we were just doing it as a, because we could. And it was good at the time, but when we had to tighten, I had a real clear priority list of, we're going to keep doing this, we're going to stop doing that. And when I say stop doing that, I mean, we'll send that whole to a shredder to be mechanically sorted and recycled. Sorting machines have gotten much better over the years. And that's another kind of piece of the puzzle I always need to try to keep in mind, is not just like we're doing it because we always have been, but if we didn't do this, what's the alternative? And knowing that there's kind of a good recycling infrastructure for things that don't need to be taken apart by hand was a good tool set that we had kind of built together as a team with Lean.
That's really cool. That's really cool. I mean, it also makes, it kind of reminds me of, you know, what I've heard about Toyota, that when, you know, Toyota experiences a time where, you know, where they have to slow things down for whatever reason, that they use that time for actually doing other kinds of improvements. So, John, what's going on now? Do you have an increased demand for laptops for kids who need to do remote schooling?
Oh yeah, and I'm sorry I don't have all the statistics, but obviously there are tens of thousands of school kids in Portland area and the state as a whole. Some communities are disproportionately impacted, and you know, some school districts are like buying new computers for their students, and others aren't. So the demand is greater than we could fulfill on our own, but that also means we have a new fire under us to get as many out as we can, do as much as we can to help with this problem. And again, the kind of silver lining is a couple years ago, we had to like try to explain to people what the digital divide was, how it's important to get computers to people who might not other have access otherwise. Now everybody knows, right? You don't have to say like, well, if you don't have a computer, you can't do your homework or you can't get telehealth appointments. So proud of the team at Free Geek. We've given a lot of computers to people who need them, have had a lot of great partnerships with organizations, and there's a lot to celebrate, but a lot more work to do. So our challenge is always, I mentioned the supply upstream. Basically, all the businesses and government partnerships we've had for years, not only like shut down their IT departments for 3 months, but also diverted all of their surplus to their staff working from home. So that most important stream mostly dried up. And it's starting to come back slowly, but businesses aren't going to refresh as quickly. They're diverting things. Their ITs are staying home. So supply side has been our challenge for a while.
So you're looking out for good used laptops and similar equipment.
We'll still take whatever the community wants to give us, but any businesses that are sitting on 100 laptops in a warehouse should reach out to us. Free Geek.
There you go. Free Geek, mm-hmm. Free Geek needs your laptops, a lot of them. Hey, Brian, I wanted to hear you talk a little bit about Lean for Good and what you're doing there.
Yeah, so because of some of this work, when we were started working with the nonprofits, I was looking for examples and other resources. And there was quite a, I wouldn't say a lot, but there was some work that has been going on with other organizations like this. So, but it was very spread out and sporadic. So I just set up a website. It's leansixsigmaforgood.com. And I'm basically just finding every article I can find or video or interview. Like this would be something I'll add to it because it's related to this topic. And trying to categorize those in some way. And the idea was that when we would approach, like, let's say a food bank, I can just send them a link to say, here are all the different articles and videos around food banks and how someone has applied lean or process improvement or Six Sigma methods to these, this particular type of work or need. There's also like natural disasters and how to recover from those. And there's organizations that have been practicing lean to try to do that faster and more effectively. And so just trying to consolidate everything I can find to get into one spot. And then, because I think, and I don't know what John thinks, but at first it's difficult to try to explain what we can offer the nonprofit. Sometimes if they can see an example or watch a video, it can, maybe the light bulb will go on, like, I see what you're trying to explain or help us with. It's not always intuitive, especially if they're not familiar with some of these terms or techniques.
Sure.
So
yeah. It's a little abstract until you can put it in like your own frame of reference.
So that's the idea, is just to try to consolidate all this information into one spot. And then I know there's more out there, and then just trying to get people to maybe document what they've done. And we haven't even been that great of documenting our own work. We try, but I know there's times I forget to put an article or put some photos together. So it takes extra time. So yeah, any resources or links or articles that I can find, I try to put them up there. And the whole idea is that, you know, we have real societal problems and issues going on, and it changes, and some get better and some get worse. And these methods work on everything, and we could use this more to support some of those problems and challenges. But I think it's right connecting the right people together and then giving them some of the knowledge and information and some help, like what we've been able to do with John at Free Geek and his team. I think we can be a part of that solution.
Right. That's Lean Six Sigma for Good. And how can people reach you, Brian, if they have something they want to contribute?
Yeah, I'm on LinkedIn. Okay. That's probably the easiest way. Or they can reach me through that website as well. They can go to the contact page and it goes to me.
Well, thank you, all three of you. This has been a great conversation. My mind is just, you know, popping with ideas about the circular economy and what am I going to do with, John, you can't see this, what am I going to do with this old pink iPod that I have that's been sitting on my desk because I just don't want to throw it out, but, you know, gosh, I don't use it anymore. And, you know, what can we do? There are so many problems that in the world, what can we do as continuous improvement folks to help move some of that along? So this has been really terrific. And I'd just like to wrap up with each one of you just, you know, saying, what does this work mean to you? And Maria, do you want to go first?
Yeah, sure. I was... you know, as we're talking, Brian's talking through his Lean Six Sigma for Good website and collecting all of those responses or examples, I'm thinking of, you know, how many people out there and how many nonprofits or other kinds of organizations are doing good work to help other people. And, you know, I appreciate the work that they're doing. And I think our small part in Lean Portland is helping them do it better.
Thanks. John?
Sure. So to me, like seeing the real impacts of we're getting more laptops out to people who need them is great. Seeing like there's less stress on staff who originally, like when we started talking about this, they're like, oh, efficiency, that means like layoffs. Like it's actually turned into like more job security because the thing that, like, maybe at the rate you're working, it's not worth doing. We're able to, you know, invest more in ourselves and, you know, have that impact there. And the other is that just, you know, being more efficient is very satisfying. Efficient's not always the right word here, but, like, you know, what I love about the job is, like, taking mountains of stuff on one side of the building and moving it through the building. And so every little tweak we can make is like a river and some dams, right? You just kind of, like, open up that channel and now your new bottleneck's over there and tweak that little thing. And having the data to support that has been great.
It sounds like it's really satisfying. So it, Brian, what about you?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, really just given me a really strong purpose. I feel like there's a lot of opportunity. You know, like, this is all a journey, right? And so we're never going to say, great, we've got lean concepts and thinking embedded in every organization in the world. So until that time, there's plenty of opportunity to spread this around. And you know, I really feel like, you know, we should be putting a lot of effort towards real problems. And it's great to help an organization, you know, make more profit on a something they're producing or get more sales and stuff like that. But when we have people who are suffering from hunger and illnesses and discrimination and things like that, you know, those are things that we really should be putting, you know, the best methods we have out there to try to solve those issues. So, and that's going to be ongoing. So there's never ending amount of opportunity going forward. So that's what I'll be working towards.
Thank you. And that, I mean, that really strikes me, you know, when there are these kinds of problems, we should be providing our best methods, our best support. All right. So thank you, Maria Grzanka and Brian Hurley and John Ashcraft for spending time with me at the edges of Lean.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bella. This was really fun.
Yeah.
This is Bella Engelbert, and I'd like to thank John Ashcraft, Maria Grzanka, and Brian Hurley for being my guests on the edges of Lean. If you're in the Portland area, you can find FreeGeek at www.freegeek.org, and there may be nonprofits recycling e-waste in a city near you. What are you doing with your old electronics? You can meet up with Maria on LinkedIn and find Brian Hurley at biz-pi.com or at lean6sigmaforgood.com. How will you engage, and how might you be more engaged with supporting nonprofit your continuous improvement practice? Please join me in exploring more of the edges of Lean. There's a lot to learn. The Edges of Lean is written and produced by Bella Engelberg. This is a Lean for Humans production.